Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Jeff Lindsay. He's the best-selling author of that great Dexter series, and he's out with his second book in his new Riley Wolf series. This book is called Fool Me Twice, and it's available now wherever books are sold. And Jeff, I got to tell you, I've fallen in love with Riley Wolf. It's such an anti-hero, kind of like in the same way Dexter was, but he's really this master thief, and the action starts in St. Petersburg at the Heritage Museum. What puts Riley there in the first place?
In the first place, it's an interesting choice. Riley's, if he was a rich, well, he is rich, but he'd be a collector if he wasn't a thief, in a way I guess he is anyway. But he loves good art, and those Fabergé eggs, I've always thought they were fascinating. And so that's where they are. And then the real impetus for it was, as he says in the book, that listening to the news, he's decided he's mad at Russia right now. So this will be sort of, a black eye for them. He steals one of their national treasures from right under their nose. And it's also, I like opening with the closing of the last theft before you move on to the next one. I think it's a nice springboard for jumping into a book.
Well, it did feel like you hit the ground running, and you did mention these Fabergé eggs, and I have to admit, before I read this book, I knew what they were in as much as I could get a Jeopardy answer right if I had to guess Fabergé, but these are really something that I don't think a lot of people are too in tune with. What makes them so rare and special?
Well, they were made for the court of the Russian Tsar and his family for special occasions. And when we say egg, it's like, isn't that nice? I'll have hard-boiled food. But no, these are not animal-made eggs. These are human-made, and they are large, about the size of an ostrich egg, and usually made of gold and platinum and silver, and they're encrusted with jewels. And there's always a surprise inside. Now, in the case of the one he steals, it's a working clock. And some of them would have like music box figures that would move and things like that. And they're incredible works of art. A little bit gaudy, but, it was the court of the Russian imperial family. And there's a limited number of them. They're made of incredibly rare materials by a master artisan. And so they're way beyond collector's items. They're just a bit... They'll take your breath away the first time you see them, and that's something I always like to stick in as a target for Riley.
Everybody who steals anything from Jean Valjean on always has an impetus for it. So what is driving Riley? What makes him a thief?
Mostly it's because people tell him, first of all, it can't be done, and you especially could never do it. That's what got him started, was you can't do it. And he says, yes, I can, just watch me, which coincidentally is the title of the first Riley Wolf book, which is now out in paperback. It's what gets him going. And he loves an impossible challenge and proving that, I can do it. And the harder it is, the more impossible it seems, the better he likes it. He's not really in it for the money anymore. It's for the challenge. And so in the new book, Fool Me Twice, he comes up against something that is, there's a limit even to Riley Wolf. And normally someone says, that's impossible. And he says, nope, not for me. Just watch me. But this time he looks it over and it's like, Yeah, no, that is impossible. No, it positively cannot be done. Sorry, no way. But if he doesn't do it, one of the most ruthless and dangerous men on the planet is going to kill him, because he's been kidnapped, basically, by this guy and said, do this job for me. So it's a little bit more of a challenge with slightly higher stakes this time.
You know, that's something when the action started in this book, and you refer to one of these ruthless people as Patrick Boniface is in the book, that not only does Riley attract attention of law enforcement who are trying to track him down, but I never thought about him being a target of other people who would have nefarious ideas for what they wanted to use him for. Is that something that just kind of came to you that, you know what, it's boring to have law enforcement tracking him, this cat and mouse game, but if you got somebody else who's even a worse person than Riley in a case, that makes for a great thriller.
Yeah, I like to, you know, it's actually, I learned this from Laurel and Hardy, believe it or not. There's movies like Big Business where it's not just one challenge. It's one challenge that goes into multiple challenges, and every step of the way it gets harder, and something new and unexpected comes at you. And it works great in comedy. It works great in thrillers, too. So in this case, he's got, you know, he's surrounded, basically. It's like if Custer had also been attacked by the Mexican army and the French cavalry and, I don't know, the Iranian Air Force all at the same time, and not just the Lakota. He's all alone, and he's surrounded by all these different people with bad intentions towards him. And the trick is to look at that guy and say, okay, here's how I make it work for me. And that's the thing that Riley is the best at.
You know, you also explain, I don't want to give away any of the plot, obviously, but the dichotomy between people who are involved in illegal businesses and rough businesses. You discuss in there, Riley does, the difference between arms dealers and drug dealers. And I thought it was an interesting take on that, because drug dealers, you're dealing with people who are, you're making them happy. They want to get high, or they want to sell drugs, and you know that makes people happy to a certain extent. Arms dealers are different, right?
Yes, absolutely. The drug dealer, as you say, is providing a need, and it's not harmless, but it certainly doesn't involve killing lots and lots of people at the same time. Arms dealers have the same motivation to, you know, sell things and make money, but what they're selling is basically a much more dangerous product. It's like the difference between someone who sells you a pillow and, you know, someone who sells you industrial welding equipment. There's the type of person who sells it is going to be different. And in this case, it's the same thing. Arms dealers really are the baddest of the bad. They're ruthless, and it's partly because their customers are more ruthless than the people who are, you know, buying hits of marijuana or cocaine. Even it's a wannabe dictator or a gorilla bunch. I don't mean the primates. It's a tough crowd, and you have to be tougher. So that makes arms dealers a lot badder, I think.
There's a lot of discussion in the book about the Vatican, and particularly a painting by Raphael that's there. But how secure of a fortress is the Vatican, as Riley finds out?
Well, as I was researching it, I learned a couple of impressive things about it. You know, everybody hears about, oh, the Swiss Guard. And you see them in these 16th century outfits, you know, that are almost comical. And they're usually carrying one of those goofy spears with an axe and a spear point on it. And the fact is that those guys are highly trained soldiers. And there's a few of them out there in costume for show. And you don't want to mess with them anyway, by the way. They know how to use those hauberks they're holding, and they know how to use about everything else. But the ones you don't see is the rest of the Swiss Guard, who are, you know, highly trained professional soldiers, and they're really skilled at security, and that means keeping things safe and people safe. Now, on top of them, there's also the Vatican Police Force, which is the gendarmes, which is a different thing. So the personnel are impressive, and there's a lot of them. And then the security, you know, electronic security is getting so sophisticated And it really comes down to your price level of what you can afford is how good it is. And without getting snarky, I'll just say that money is not a problem for the Roman Catholic Church. So the electronic security is incredibly good, too.
You've had experience selling a character over the years. You sold the Dexter character, and Showtime went with the series. And I always, frankly, thought the books were 1,000 times better after that first season. I thought the books just outdid the show.
God bless you, sir.
But is there anything you've learned? Maybe somebody's already come knocking for the Riley Wolf character, but if you were to sell this, is there anything you learned from your experience with the Dexter character that you would do differently now if you were to sell Riley Wolf for a similar series?
It's a small thing. But what I learned as the series went on and talking to different psychologists along the way, I had Dexter sort of created as a sociopath from a traumatic early experience. And maybe this is subtle, but in reality that could trigger it, but it couldn't create it. There's a thing called brain mapping, and what that is literally looking at your brain and making a topographical map and saying, this area here controls that, this area over here does that. And there's a thing they discovered called the empathy bump. And if you don't have one, you're a sociopath. You literally cannot feel empathy or care about other people and so on any more than you care about your favorite armchair. So I think I would have made that more explicit rather than, you know, creating Dexter from that trauma early on, make it clear that that's who he is and it can't change.
Is it possible when a TV series takes over a character like that, that it can do detriment to you as you're trying to write the same character at the same time in your books? Do people get turned off by the TV version of it?
I don't think it that's ever happened. I mean, I worked in Hollywood for 12 years, and so I know how the game works, and I'm not threatened by it or angered by it. I got really, really lucky with a good adaptation, good people on it, and when it goes in a different direction, I know why. You know, there are financial reasons, there are reasons for, like, the actors want to explore something and, you know, keep them happy, the show runs longer. That's always a good thing. So, no, I don't think it's ever bothered me in any way.
I know that you had always talked about, in the last time we talked, you said that people would tell you, well, write something just like Dexter. Well, write something different, when in fact they meant write something just like Dexter. Are you really finding Riley's voice now as you're two books into this?
Yeah, I like to think so. And it's, you know, it's more difficult with Riley because in the course of the books, he becomes several different people. So it's got to be several voices. But the basic Riley Wolf voice, I think I'm getting comfortable with. You know, and it's kind of a smart aleck with a chip on his shoulder.
Well, and I've fallen in love with him, as I told you. I love it. This book, this new one, is called Fool Me Twice. It's the latest Riley Wolf book from Jeff Lindsay. The book's available now wherever you want to buy books. Jeff, fantastic offering here. Thanks for joining me to talk about it.
Thanks, Brian. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I hope we can talk again soon.
As do I. Thank you.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.